हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौनातु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर शिव सवि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 93. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Vyasadeva poses an objection, because right? Narad Muni said that the Supreme Lord is not apparent, for he is unlimited, so therefore you have to describe it directly. Right? So then Vyasadeva says, but if these confused readers do not think of giving up their path, even now if I follow your instructions and preach bhakti with rejection of all else, they will reject this scripture. Narad Muni answers, no, it is not so. In this world, not all people are undiscerning. Discerning people do exist, and they can understand the happiness of the Lord, who is devoid of any end by time, who even now exists. Right? So that therefore is that you're preaching for the discriminating persons, right? Because he was thinking, what will be the best for the mass of people? How to benefit them all? So, for the mass of people, since they're not interested in bhakti, by being situated in their particular prescribed duties, right? Being in those prescribed duties with an understanding that the Supreme is there and devotional service is the highest, but you're not telling them that doing what they're doing is really a problem. Therefore, then they will all together basically work in this way. As we see, you know, in general within the Indian subcontinent, then there's one culture because they're all following that advice as given in the Mahabharata, right? But the point is they'll remain there because he says that the confused readers do not think of giving up their path. They don't think of giving up fruitive activities. They only think about that. Now, the point is his idea is better they're following the Vedic and the fruitive activities than modern and fruitive activities. Because the one will at least create a harmonious environment for if there are someone who's serious, then it's favorable. If they go for a modern solution, then it will only create a disturbance. Everything changes, there's no, you know, it can, with people's whims, the whole cultural values and standards can change. So you don't have a consistent culture. Right, because in India, even though you have different nationalities within, or they be like that, nationality may not be means in your modern political nation is a particular political country, but the older term nation means a group of people who, you know, talk, think, eat, behave. Their value system is same, so it's a community, but it's bigger than a community, right? You know, so you have your, you know, Gujarati community. So in that way, I guess you could say your communities, but it's much bigger, right? Because it's a whole value system. So in India, you have all these, previously they were countries, so they were nations, that were all following the same culture. So all of them could interact with each other nicely. You know, you have some specific uniqueness to each one. You know, how they'll eat or how they'll do something, but basically, the culture-wise, it was all exactly the same, so there's no problem. So in this way, then you had a harmonious world culture, right? Now there's the idea of having a one world culture, but the modern, it's not working out so well. Because basically, if you're not middle class, it doesn't work for you. If you're upper class, it's too common. If you're lower class, you don't have the money and facilities. So you really have to be just real middle class. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just the way it works. So here is a system that accommodates everybody. Right? Because your position in society by class is not by money, but it's by your behavior. Right? And it's not necessarily, if that's cultivated in that way, that character and culture and money are connected. In the modern, basically, it is. It's rare to find any exception. But in the Vedic, you'd have very poor people who'd be very cultured. Like that. So does that make sense? So Vyasadeva's looking at it like that. But Narad Muni's saying, because this has already been done, the Mahabharata, he's not saying, you know, throw it out. So that's been done. But the point is you're leaving it at that, therefore you have to take it further. You have to give the actual solution, which is Krishna consciousness. Now, discerning people will take it. The not so discerning, they already have Mahabharata, right? So they're already pious and behaving nicely. But the people who do take it, who actually take the Bhagavatam, those, you know, discerning persons, then they'll perfect their life in devotional service. And at the same time, there'll be a very peaceful environment to do that in. Right? Means the, you know, the Vedic culture. Right? Does that make sense? Because Vaishnav means perfect Brahman. So it's still Brahminical culture, it's just the top end of Brahminical culture. Right? Does that make sense? Because sometimes we, just like if I say, okay, in society we have poor, we have middle class, and we have rich. Anybody has any confusion? It doesn't make any sense. You can't relate to it at all. No, it just works so nicely, so smoothly. And that, of course. So all we're saying is that there's Brahman, right? There's Vipra, and there's Vaishnava. It's the same thing. The medium for defining the higher, the middle, and the lower, instead of being money, is knowledge and devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. So the lower class doesn't have money, right? The middle class kind of has enough money. But the upper class, they've realized this money. They have it. They can use it. So the scriptures are there. And so the Brahmins are following it. But they may not know so much. The Vipra, he knows nicely. Right? The scriptures and all that. But he hasn't realized them. But he has, you know, a good amount to work with very dynamically. While Vaishnavas, then there's realization. Understand? So you're always going to have that. You know? Does that make sense? You know, in other words, the person who has a interest, right, in a subject, the enthusiast in the subject and the master in the subject. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what, when we say Brahminical culture, there's one culture. Now, who is more developed in that Brahminical culture is the Vaishnavas. Then the scholar is another, you know, very nicely practicing are the next. Then those who, you know, accept it and are, you know, getting by. You understand? So it's not something different. So that's why the Vedic culture is Brahminical culture. It's not another culture, right? In other words, occupation, not culture. It's part of culture, but it itself is not the main part of culture. Culture is ashram, right? And in the Vedic concept, there's only one ashram, Brahminical. There isn't another ashram. How good you are at it, that's another thing. Brahmins are good at following it. Vipras are better at following. Vaishnavas are the best. Kshatriyas do a pretty good job at it, right? Generally, the form of it, they follow very nicely. Sometimes the attitude gets a little weird. Right? Just because of the passion, the volume, the intensity of what they're dealing with, it becomes sometimes difficult. Vaishnavas get distracted quite a bit. Though they follow it nicely, because if they're educated, they know that by being pious, that's the only way you're going to be rich. You don't get rich by being impious. Right? Because you're talking about long-term piety. You know, you're rich, your children are rich, your grandchildren are rich. Right? You don't really know the worries about the great grandchildren, right? Because it's beyond the scope of your experience. But, you know, but you understand. So you just worry about that. That's only going to happen by piety. You can do something today, get some money right now, but will you have it tomorrow? Understand? Mm-hmm. So, therefore, on certain things, the religious sides of it, they'll follow nicely. Other sides, they may or may not, depending upon the culture of the family. Right? Shudras, then they'll follow also how much they can, because they're part of it, because they are assisting Vipras. Vipras are following that culture, so there isn't something else going on. Right? So basically they follow it. The home, then it's up to them. They may not be so organized and clean. They may be very clean. So it's very individual. You know what I'm saying? So it's very individual in the Shudras. You know, general in the Vaishyas. Very solid in the Kshatriyas and proper, you know, full in the Brahmins. You understand? But the point of the culture is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, those who know the scriptures, it's better, but you're supposed to, by knowing the scripture means knowing the purport. So they know the verses, they know the technical things, but they may or may not fully understand the purport of devotion. Right? They know, but they don't necessarily, just like Sarvabhauma, he knew. But he never realized it, right? Until Lord Chaitanya came. So when Lord Chaitanya is there, by his association, by the association of Gopinath Acharya, who's his devotee, then he realized. You understand? So sometimes we take it as all these different things, and oh, we're Vaishnavas, this, that's different. No, it's just one culture. Just the Vaishnava is the actual position what the culture is for. It's not different. That's why Prabhupada calls it Brahminical culture. Vedic culture and the Vedic and Brahminical culture are the same thing. Right? Yes.
So one point of confusion in this kind of seems to be when people hear Prabhupada say that we should all be Brahminical, they're thinking it means that we're all necessarily going to work in Brahmana Varna, but actually Brahminical, we should all be...
Brahminical ashram. And then Varna according to your nature, because there's that one letter, we came through it last year, that where Prabhupada's describing management in ISKCON. And one of the main things he brought out is the manager should be able to understand the nature of an individual and engage them in that way. So, and this letter was, I don't remember what year the letter was. It would have been quite early. So that whole concept has always been there. That's what Prabhupada, when Prabhupada says varnashram, means engaging devotees according to their nature. We take it that you know somebody's got to wear a crown and have a sword, and someone else has got to be fat and rolling in money, and someone else has to be disgusting and degrading, and you know you're always worried about getting them on the bottom of your shoe, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, it's very very. How you say? Exaggerated. But the point is it's the difference isn't so much. You don't feed me. Those who appreciate the culture and that, going into a shudra's house, the treatment you'll get, the mood you'll feel, and going into a very wealthy person's house, you won't feel hardly any difference. Just the facilities they use is better. You know, one will be a huge room. And this other one is this little dinky thing that's both the living room and, you know, the auxiliary kitchen and the go-down and the bedroom. Like that. But the mood in which they deal and serve and talk is exactly the same. You know, it may not be as refined, but the mood is the same. Like that. So before, it didn't matter where you were, in which part of India, which social class, anything, you got the same flavor.
So that's not even Vaishnava, that's just Vedic culture.
That's just Brahminical culture.
Yeah.
And then you have the scholars, which then are another level, because then you can really discuss what's happening. These people don't know, they just know this is what you're supposed to do, this is what our family's always done, they know it's good. You know, one or two things they may know why, most of the things they don't, they just have faith, so they follow. You know, so it's like Prabhupada said, it's, you know, how you say, religion without philosophy, it's sentiment. But it's better than nothing. Prabhupada said, you know, I say that Bengali saying, Morahati lak taka. A dead elephant is still worth a lakh of rupees, you know. Dead or alive, it's the same price. So the it's valuable because then you could go there, you could do everything, you can, you know, everything was available everywhere you go. It was, everything worked very smoothly, you know. But as you go into the modern, it becomes harder and far harder for the devotees. You know, it's like that. So it's Brahminical culture. Varna is completely different. Varna is Brahminical. How many devotees are Brahminical by Varna? How many are, you know, writers or teachers or full-time pujaris or, you know, this kind of thing, doctors, lawyers, this kind of element? Very few. But as far as ashram goes, because we're, see, devotees are doing artik in the temple, you know, coming, doing mangal artik, you know, however you say, every day or once a week, or as part of their sadhana, it's part of ashram. The one who's a full pujari, time pujari, and that's all he does, that's bhavarna. So, like, you know, you take one whole community, like 1,500 devotees, like there, how many are full time pujaris? It's only a handful. I mean, here it's 2,000-3,000. And, you know, I know there's 40 full-time pujaris. Like that. In a lachra, it's even less. You know, it's saying you got 1,500. You know, you have 4 or 5 or something.
Actually, it's quite a bit more, but
okay.
Your point's well taken.
Yeah, even if you take it up to 30, who goes to the morning program.
30, 40.
But that's it. But no, but I'm talking about that they would be full-time taken care of and maintained by that. You know what I'm saying? It's less. So the point is that's not the main point. The point is that the sadhana, everybody has a common culture. That's where the common culture is. But as far as occupation, that doesn't matter. The devotees put it on occupation. You know, they take it as, that's my identity. I'm a Brahmin by Varna. But it's like, who are you kidding? You know? So the thing is generally those who would say that wouldn't be one. Like that.
When in 1977, February 14th, when Harishara and then the famous Varnashram congregation, Harishara said, Prabhupada, after 6 months, a year, after first initiation, then they get Brahminical in this, they become Brahmin. And then Prabhupada's response is, why make a fart? Why make a fart? Let them remain Shudra. He meant working according to their master. But by following the pure devotee and the rules and regulations, they can go back to Godhead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why make a fart?
Yeah, it's not. It's, the reality is just, it doesn't matter. So there, nowadays it's very difficult. It's hard. You can't use, say, Shudra, this or that. But basically speaking, as far as vocation goes, a lot of devotees, that's what they do.
Most people.
Yeah. So that's not the problem, because your identity is not that. Means even the identity in ashram is not there, but the point is it's devotee, because for us the ashram side is devotee. And as a devotee you sit yourself as brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. So varna just really doesn't matter, because varna actually is only has a consideration socially amongst grihasthas. Amongst the brahmacharyas, vanaprastha, sannyasis, it doesn't really have any meaning. You know? It's just like that. It's just like the person is a, you know, Vaishya by nature, but they're not a grihastha. And so they do great preaching. You know, but they just work in those ways that as their skills as a Vaishya, they engage in Krishna's service full time. So you don't count them as that. You just engage them in that way. That's why you have to know Varnashram, you know, for applying it, you know, in the Daivavarnashram system. So it's taken, no, we don't need that, but that's unnatural. Then you say, no, but people should want to do things and want it like that, but that means you're considering individuality and people engaged according to what they like. So that's all the Vedic is saying. But the point is the Vedic knows what goes together. So you like this, but you don't like that. You know, just like the lady wants to do the yajna. She does. But she doesn't want to set it up or clean up afterwards. So that's not Varnashram. So the point is, you do the whole thing, then you can do it. Right? If you like to eat, then you got to wash dishes. You got to go to the market. You have to cook. You have to take out the garbage. You don't want to do those things, you don't eat. Or then microwave dinner is, hey, you know, like that. You know?
when the Prabhupada introducing the Varnashram College concept, it was so revolutionary, March, April, 74. And then you hear this on the tape, you hear the devotees really getting into the Varnas. And then Prabhupada has to pull them back. He said, now, wait a minute. Remember, we're Vaishnavas.
That is
not the identity, Brahmins are true.
Yeah, that's the difficulty. You bring it up, they take it as an identity because the modern culture so much identifies with their Varna. Because there is no ashram. You know, Malecha is not an ashram. You know, even if you make it vegetarian, it's still not an ashram. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that it's just not understood. So Gita gives that understanding, technical. But as far as its practical application, that's why then the Bhagavatam is so important, because it shows various devotees in their positions and how they act as Vaishnavas and at the same time are performing their duties. You know, so when we hear about the duties of the Pandavas and what they're doing, we're only hearing some very, very major elements. We don't hear at all about other aspects of what they do as Kshatriyas. You know, like that. It's just, you don't hear about it. You don't hear about Yudhishthira generally holding court. You hear about them adjudicating cases. You don't hear about them having war councils. You don't hear about them dealing with spies. You don't hear them talking with his ministers. These are Varna things. So you only hear of it in relationship to his, basically the ashram side. You know how when they go out, then, you know, they went out and, are living in the forest. And so how he's taking care of the Brahmins. So that a Kshatriya, they have that sense of protection, so therefore they do it on a big level. You know, if a Brahmin was being thrown out of the city, then no one would expect he'll take care. But the Kshatriya does that. But it's the presentation of it is from the ashram side, taking care of them, feeding them and all that, doing the austerity. So then, you know, he gets that plate from the sun god, you know, that goes to Draupadi. Draupadi, that's also coming from that side of her service and serving Prasad and like that. So in other words, the focus is always on the ashram side, like that. Varna side is just understood, especially in Bhagavatam, you already know that. You know, you don't have to discuss that, it's already understood. You know, it's just like, let's say, yeah, you know, It's just understood, all that stuff. So there's no focus on it, though it's there. So it needs that balance. But that unfortunately, that would take time to discuss, because you're dealing with so much misunderstanding that you would probably have to spend many, many days discussing for many, many hours for devotees to work out their doubts and their misgivings, so that they could be then move forward in the proper understanding of how you use Varnashram. And then once you do that, then, you know, you could start to get somewhere. Okay, Narad Muni continues. Descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord are so purifying and powerful that even if one forsakes his material engagements to engage in devotional service and falls down due to immaturity, there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. Right? And then very opposite of, you know, what is being the modern practice, is that even he gives up his material engagements, right? You know, just full-time, you know, just devotional service, and that's all he does. If he falls down from there, there's no loss. He will never be unsuccessful, because what he was doing was actually what is successful. Well, if you are performing your material engagements at the expense of devotional activities, how will you ever be successful? Right? So these terms, practical and all that, means practical in the economic field. It means in economics and sense gratification. We have to remember, the concept of dharma doesn't exist really in the modern culture, except when it comes to, let's say, doing something for your country, or, you know, he gave his life for his country. Then you're talking about dharma there, like that. But, you know, but other than that, basically, there's hardly ever a mention of dharma, right? It's all taken, everything it's taken as a light thing, or doesn't exist. Right? Does this make sense? So this idea of shifting it, no, about the material engagement is what's so important, and that's how we identify, and that's how we'll be successful, and that's how people will appreciate us and all that. No, everybody's doing a job. No one has a life. Devotees have a life. That's what people are attracted to. Because otherwise, even if you go out there, get your degree, do everything, how many are successful that they're the leading people who actually make it happen in that area? Right? That's also a handful. And that we're talking about, you know, except for the Indian community. Basically, you know, in the whole world there'll be a handful. Like that? Because the Indian community, these two things aren't a problem to balance like that. So you can be a doctor and a lawyer and come to the temple and sweep the floor. It's not a problem for them. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada stresses the absolute value of even seemingly unsuccessful efforts for surrender. Quote, as far as the duties of mankind are concerned, there are innumerable duties. Every man is duty-bound not only to his parents, family members, society, country, humanity, other living beings, the demigods, etc., but also to the great philosophers, poets, scientists, etc. It is enjoined in the scriptures that one can relinquish all such duties and surrender under the service of the Lord. But it so happens sometimes that one surrenders himself under the service of the Lord by some temporary sentiment, and in the long run, due to so many other reasons, he falls down from the path of service by undesirable association. But in spite of all this, the stress is given here to surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Lord, even if there is a chance of falling down. Because even though one falls down from the prescribed duties of devotional service, he will never forget the lotus feet of the Lord. Once engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, one will continue the service in all circumstances. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that even a small quantity of devotional service can save one from the most dangerous position. Right? So remember, this is chapter 5, which means first canto, which means written back before Prabhupada went to America. So this is not after watching the Westerners. This is before, right? So footnote 47. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. But Bhagavad Gita also says, quote, the wise man should not disturb the intelligence of the ignorance attached to the results of work. Engaging in all work himself with detachment, he should engage them in activity. Bhagavad Gita 3.26. Thus it is forbidden to give up karma. That is true. Right, so in the Utta. That is true. This instruction is given to one who is teaching jnana to another person. Practicing jnana depends on inner purification, and that purification depends on nishkama karma. This is not an instruction for one teaching another person about bhakti. For bhakti is independently powerful, not depending on prior inner purification. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So now we're getting here is that you shouldn't disturb the minds of those who are ignorant and attached to fruit of activity. So Vyasadeva did that very nicely. He worked in such a way they wouldn't get disturbed. But now he's pointing out, Vishwanath's pointing out, is yes, that's true, except for bhakti. Bhakti is in a different category because it's not dealing actually with your activities. You know what I'm saying? It's not according to your varna and ashram. Bhakti is independent from that. That's the difficulty. It's like Prabhu was saying, is that we either, it's something completely separate, we have no connection with at all, you know, like a fork and a spoon or something. They just don't have any connection, you know, or, you know, a boat and a lake, you know, these kind of things, just no connection at all. One's a boat, one's water. One's hard, made out of wood, one's water. What's the connection, right? Or they're totally merged into each other and you can't separate them, right? You know, I'm the kshatriya, I'm the this, I'm the that, you know, so the point is that bhakti is something separate because it's added on to. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's added on to. It's the actual mentality with which you perform your duty. So the duties don't change. All that changes is the attitude of devotion. So Prabhupada's mentioning, okay, let us say someone decides just to engage themselves only in sadhana, exclusively. Right? No family life, no occupation. Just sadhana. Fine. So by doing that, they'll get connected with the Lord, and then if it's successful, great. And if it's not, right, because it was just sentiment like this, then if they fall down from that position due to bad association and all that, they will never, how do you say? they will never forget Krishna. They just don't. You know, the devotees that are out there, been out there for 10, 20 years, they don't forget Krishna. You go to their houses, they haven't forgotten. Like that. You understand? So it's in a different category. But the point is bhakti doesn't have to be, is not a separate thing that doesn't go well with it. You know, it's not like, it's like you're driving in a car and you roll down the window. It's not that it's a problem. You know, you just get some fresh air. You know? So that's the whole thing, is the system of what you're doing remains. You just change your mentality by which you are doing those duties. Instead of it being for yourself, it's for Krishna. That's all that changes. Very, very subtle system. That's why it's hard to understand. Because for us, it's always, it's this or it's that. They're either good or they're bad. You know, either they're, you know, top celebrity, or they're, you know, nobody's heard about them. You know, so there's no such thing as, you know, all this nice range of things that compatibly work together. That's the grossness of the modern. Because when you leave the Vedic standards, then it's up to the individual's emotions and minds and feelings. So that means everybody's mind is different. So therefore, you have as many people, you have that many cultures. And so that's not going to work out. You know? Does that make sense? That's the example of taking a handful of pebbles and throwing them into the water. You just get all these, you know, it just ripples. It doesn't come out nice. They all bump into each other. But if you throw one, then you can have unlimited. So that's the thing. It's, yes, I'll follow Varnashram as the center. You know, or I'll be devotional service as the center. No, the point is neither of them allow for that. Right? One allows a little bit more. Cooperative center. You know? We're all separate rocks. We just agree to drop into the same place. You know, but I'm dropping first because I'm the senior one, and then you can drop next, you know. So all the ripples that come out of there then are all from our center, like that. But, you know, there's a hierarchy. No? Like that. But it's a difficulty. So Vishwanath's pointing out is that, yes, it's true, but bhakti is separate. So on gyan, you have to be careful. Right? The person who's so absorbed in fruit of activities, make sure it's pious, make sure it's going in the right direction. Right? And then slowly introduce knowledge, but not in a way that disturbs them. But bhakti, you don't have to worry about. Bhakti, you can preach bhakti. Bhakti means the devotional understanding, not even the forms of sadhana. It means the understanding. Is that something? Yeah.
Huh. That example you gave about the rocks, technically called an interference.
Interference pattern.
Yeah, one thing's interfering with another, not cooperative.
But see, you need to change the perspective. See, is the interference pattern, you're making it seem like all rocks are equal. Right? So each one is interfering with the other. But no, but ourself as the center, everyone else is interfering with us. See, now if everybody else would stop doing that, the world would be a wonderful place. Right? So that's the difficulty, is even there's interference in the concept of the interference. You know, it's just, you don't have anything to work with. That's why Prabhupada gave the Vedic culture. They're taking it as somehow or another that modern is the international world culture. Technically, I think the only country, well, no, the only country that thinks like that, I think, is America. Others don't mind having control over everybody else, but they're not thinking that they have to follow the culture. Like the British, they go and control the world, but it's not that you follow British culture, because you're a savage, you know. It's like, you know, you should be cooperative when you come to the house and serve the tea. You should do it right, but, you know, what you do in your own spare time, they don't really care.
They're not qualified anyway.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you have to understand. Gentleman and the savage, you know. Like that.
Yeah. Does that mean that even though one may consider oneself to be very glorious, one could actually be somebody else's adipati klesha?
No, that, not that you could be, you are. It's guaranteed. But don't worry, you're not the adi daiva klesha.
Worry about that business. Okay. So Lord Ajita says, one who knows the highest good will never instruct a foolish person to engage in material enjoyment. Just as an experienced physician does not give his patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Srimad Bhagavatam 6950. Therefore, the Lord says, Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Bhagavad Gita 1866. And as well, having taken complete shelter of my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best amongst all living entities. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.32. Right, so, in other words, Vaishnavas, whatever they do is always a religious activity. It's something recommended in scripture. Right? We have this idea, no, we don't care about scripture, we kick it out. We just do service to Krishna. As he pointed out, Krishna's 20th quality out of the 64 is he sees and speaks and acts according to scripture. So therefore, in other words, Krishna's saying is don't be following scripture because it's scripture. Be engaged in Krishna's service. Now, if Krishna is always doing activities that are connected to scripture, that means the devotee in devotional service will be doing activities connected to scripture. It's just that you're doing it because it pleases Krishna, not because of the benefit you'll get. Right? Or the identity. Yes, I'm an honest man. That was the point with Yudhishthira Maharaj. Right? He's identifying that I always speak the truth. That's me. But Krishna's saying, no, you're a devotee. Right? So therefore, as a devotee, you can do anything for Krishna, so you can lie for Krishna. So that's giving it up because it pleases Krishna. But you have to make sure it's pleasing Krishna. Right? Not that everybody's sitting around on their horse and see a caravan of Arabs going by and then they all go take out their swords and go, it's God's will. Like that. You know, you avoid that one. You know, that's kind of, you know, you have to kind of have a little bit more devotional and scriptural background. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is this sentimental thing is just because a group has the same mode, so then they have the same way of dealing. And then because there's a community of feeling, then that feeling is spiritual. That's the problem in the modern. Pranamoya is considered spiritual. There is no concept above that. It just isn't. Because what are you getting from God? Some benefit. Oh, just read something yesterday. What were we reading that from? Yeah, a description about the universal form. That was it. The universal form. The second canto. We'll get to it later. But it was interesting. Is that it's talking about the devotees see the front of the Lord. Those who don't accept the form of the Lord, you know, the non-devotees and those who don't accept the form of the Lord, they see the back of the Lord. Right. So, I'm not sure one fully appreciates the implications of that one. You know, see the back. So, in other words, if they don't accept that the form of the Lord's eternal, then they're seeing the back of the Lord. So, all those different things, so all those bad qualities naturally come up. Greed, envy, attachment, all those, because that's the back of the Lord. All the nice ones are the front. But very, very interesting is how even people are seeing the Lord, then they're, which side of the Lord they're seeing. You know? Because it's just, it's not, it's a matter of what is their actual interest. So even they're connecting to the Lord, it's not about pleasing the Lord. That's devotion, that's the front of the Lord. This is about getting something from the Lord. So therefore, then all their material desires, everything comes up from that. Okay. From the strength of these statements, one should teach only bhakti to the Lord while giving up attachment to daily and periodic duties in varnashram. Right? In other words, things that are the daily and periodic duties, those are within ashram, not in varna. Right? Means you go to work, you know, as a regular thing like this, kind of things like that. But it's talking about daily and periodic duties, like you have daily duties of offering the how you say,
the rice to all the ghosts and everybody else around the house. We just offer it to Krishna. They're automatically taken care of. You know, we don't have to worry about the forefathers. We're studying the Bhagavatam, so we don't have to do a separate thing for them. You know, guess when Vaishnavas and that come, we take care. Does this make sense? You know, so we deal nicely with all the living entities. We do. So the Pancha Mahayagyas are already taken care of. So we don't have to worry about those. We don't have those obligations, because that's the point. Is there's obligations. That's what Prabhupada says. Every man is duty-bound not only to his parents, family members, society, country, humanity, other living beings, the demigods, etc., but also the great philosophers, poets, scientists, etc. They're duty-bound. They're not paying the debt. They're getting sin for not doing that. The devotee doesn't have to worry about those, because those are your daily and periodical activities. You know, so the guests may or may not come every day, right? The offerings to the Buddhas and that's done every day, because you eat every day. You know, the offerings to the forefathers, that's done once a year. Does that make sense? Yeah, so these kind of things one doesn't have. Right? But he's doing it because of Varnashram. Now, if those are part of his duties and they come in, they can be useful in service to Krishna, there's no need to give them up. So in other words, what's useful in serving Krishna, that's left. What's not, that's what's given up. But you have to actually know what's what, because otherwise if you sentimentally give things up, then you'll have the same problem that Prabhupada mentioned. Whatever position you take, one will fall down from that. Even the modern things. You notice everybody jumps up and down for a while, the thing's in the air, it's the news, everyone's talking about it. A couple of years later, no one talks about it. No one even cares. If you bring it up, no one really cares. Before it was like, it moved people, action was happened, major things happened, everything happened, money, manpower, effort. But now, a few years later, it comes up, nobody even cares. It's not even a topic for discussion. That's the problem with modern. There's not the standard. There's no set standard. You understand? Vedic has a standard, but you have to be able to discern what is important, what's primary, what's secondary. With this intention, this verse is spoken. Even in the beginning stage of bhakti, practice of karma is forbidden. Having given up one's dharma, chaktvasvadharman, even in the beginning stage of bhakti, a person who worships the lotus feet of the Lord will incur no sin by giving up that dharma. So that means he's either not doing it at all, or it means he's not doing it for karma. He's connecting it to the Lord, so it's karma yoga, so it's devotional service. This is understood also from the following. Anyone who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41. These are the ones they're talking about. We don't think it means those. Because when we say, oh, give up one's duty, we think, okay, taking out the garbage or going to work or being nice to my family. I give that up. Because there's no such thing as obligation. Who's in the Western culture, who's obligated to the demigods? Right? I mean, you may love the celebrities, but you don't have any obligation. Right? You're not obliged to buy the tabloid, you're not obliged to watch the movie, but you do it just as a natural course. Sages, who even knows what a sage is? Even people don't even know it's that spice in the kitchen, because they don't even know cooking. Right? General living entities, no? Okay. You're supposed to be at least superficially nice, but actually you don't really care. It's all about yourself. Family members, need we say more? Humankind, okay, now that's something that I occasionally talk about, over some herbal tea, organic, of course. And forefathers, whoever, who does that? Right, if you're Boston Brahmin, you worry about the forefathers. So if you're not, forget it. Who cares? No? So it doesn't even come up as a thought when you say give up your duties, that it means these, because this takes up a lot of your day. Household life means you're dealing with this all the time. Right? Demigods means you're doing worship. Sages means you're studying. General living entities means you're distributing food, you know, being welfare, being kind, nice, like that. Family members means you're interacting with them properly and taking care of them. Humankind means then guests and other things like that. Forefathers, then, you know, sometimes, you know, they, you know, you might remember that that urn on your, you know, mantelpiece, you know, happens to be your, you know, mother or grandmother. Most of the time it's just is something that, you know, decorative piece that's there that you generally don't even remember about. No? Yeah. And if the person dies without being qualified to attain the Lord, or if while alive falls down because of sinful acts, being attached to material pleasures, even then there's no misfortune occurred by having given up karmas. Right? Like that. Because the impressions created by bhakti are indestructible. Right? So, in other words, one has that faith in bhakti, one is acting in that way, even if he falls down from that position, there's nothing lost. So what we're speaking about are those who are attached to those duties and are saying that these are more important than bhakti. Right? Or, you know, these all have to be done. Only then you're, you know, proper devotee. That kind of thing, then where's the obligation? Are you taking care of all these different personalities? All these obligations, are they being done? If you're saying, no, it's only service, but then, you know, that should be the focus. Even if one has fallen from that, but that's still your intent. But if the intent is not that, you know, there's devotional service and then there's reality, then that reality has a price to pay. And if you're not paying it according to the Vedas, you're not paying it. You're just not, you know. Somehow the landlord is not included as one of these personalities. You know, they fall into humankind, but it's not, that doesn't cover everything else. It just doesn't. Yes.
All this happens only to those who have bhakti, faith in bhakti?
Yeah. Because others then, if a karmakandi gives up, then it's just reactions. There's no benefit. It's only if, because of understanding devotional service with an intent to please the Lord, one may sentimentally give everything up and then fall down. You know, or even if he doesn't sentimentally give it up, he gives it up and is doing well, but by bad association falls down. It doesn't matter. There's no loss. So there's no reaction for giving up the karma. But someone who is interested in fruitive activities, they give up the karma. There's a reaction. In other words, whatever is your intent, that you have to do. Even we discussed before. Let's say you have a bogus standard. If you don't follow your own bogus standard, there's actually a reaction for not following your bogus standard. You know? It's just the way Krishna arranges. Because the point is, standards are there, they must be followed. People can't be lazy. There's obligations. To the Vedic, it's all about obligations. That's why it's not appreciated, because the modern, it's all about rights. Of course, as we were talking before, the rocks in the pond, my rights, everyone else's obligations. You know, that's the problem. That's why I was saying that this interference means, because it's not,
yeah.
I am someone else's, you know, right. No, I only have rights. Everyone else has obligations. Like that. The Vedic is everyone has obligations. That's why there's not a problem. Like that. Okay. Because the impressions created by bhakti are indestructible and remain in subtle form. This impression element is very important. What does that mean, impressions? Why would that be an important point that Vishwanatha made?
They will come up.
And they will come up later, but also what is the importance of impressions in our life?
They create
future, okay. But I mean, let's say, okay. In other words, what is it we're doing every moment? We're applying, you know, our position of rationale on whatever we're doing. What's it based on?
We'll see.
False ego, that would be part of it?
Previous impressions.
Impressions. Yeah. In other words, I'm going to imply my intelligence on the situation,
right? Depending upon how I view the situation. I view the situation by the impressions. So if the impressions are devotional, I'll see it that way, even if I'm not able to do a good job of it. But I'll see it that way. Right? That's the point. Even if you have the very pious person, does everything perfectly, all his impressions are only pious. He'll never see anything devotionally. So it's not superior. But the devotee, even in a fallen state, is still seeing with devotional impressions. So they're superior. Right? Then, according to your false ego, that's which of those, in other words, the impressions is how you'll, what you'll perceive. The intelligence will then make options based on what you can do with what you perceived. And your false ego is going to be which one you choose, which matches best your ego. Right? So if you change your ego to I'm servant of Krishna, you do devotional service, that changes your impressions. The intelligence is still just does what it does. It's not that the car changed when you became a devotee, or the house changed. It's the same, it does the same function. Right? You know, devotional service is so wonderful that when I became a devotee, my blender changed. You know, it became pink and I didn't have to put anything in. It washed itself. It was so fabulous. I love this Krishna consciousness. Right? No, no. It's, the mechanics of intelligence stay the same. All that changes is the beginning and the end. How you perceive what comes in from your senses and what you decide to do with your senses. So that's why Krishna is, it's about these two. Like Arjuna is talking about doing these wonderful activities, but he hasn't changed his perception and hasn't changed his ego. So Krishna says, you'll still end up going to the forest and fighting. So that's the thing. Because the impressions created by bhakti are indestructible and remain in settled form. That's what Prabhupada said. You know, just very few have stopped being devotees. Right? Even they go away, you don't see them forever. They're still devotees. Yes.
Yeah. Don't you tell your war group of Goswami that that elephant offense kind of roots the creature?
Yes, of course.
Is that an exception to this?
I mean, in other words, other than that, bhakti is indestructible. Because it's spiritual. The soul is spiritual. That's there. It's actually an activity of the soul. But if you create a mad elephant offense, that's then a problem. But by the grace of the name, if you're still in good association and the practices, slowly, slowly you can kind of work through that. But if you give up that association, give up the practice, then you're in a very difficult situation.
There's
often
an exception to this endeavor, there's no
loss of life. Yeah, of course. The point is this is the standard how it works. You know, just like, you know, once going, one never returns. Technically one could, but just no one does. It's not that mathematically they couldn't, but just they don't. You know, it's just like that purport where Prabhupada's talking about the four Kumaras and Jai and Vijay. So the point is there's devotees may get into arguments over what's the best way to serve Krishna because they're all individual and you have different rasas and all these different, you know, situations. So there may be an argument, but Krishna will intervene before there's any offense committed. So technically you could commit an offense, but it just doesn't happen. So with Jai and Vijay, he came just a moment late. It said they just cursed him and then the Lord showed up. He could have showed up a moment earlier because they're Jaya Vijaya. Where are they? They're on the outer gates. There's seven sets of gates. And it's not that it's one right after another. There's one and then there's huge gardens and this, then the next gate. And then, so therefore, to come from where he was to that front gate, you know, and get there one, you know, moment after they've been cursed, he could have been there, you know, one moment earlier. But it's because it was the desire of Jaya Vijaya to serve in that way of fighting with the Lord. Because he can't do it in Vaikuntha. So then Krishna arranged it that way.
It was their desire first before the Lord's desire to fight?
No. They were saying the Lord is all... Because they're gatekeepers. So that they're strong. They're the strongest people there, right? Because the strongest people are the gatekeepers. Of all the gatekeepers, then Jaya Vijaya are the main gatekeepers.
right? Because each there's seven walls. Each wall has four gates. So it's 28 gates, right? So that means 56, gatemen. So now all of them, Jai Vijay, are the main. So that means they're the strongest out of the strongest. So then they're contemplating, it's just like Drishtadyumna after Draupadi was taken by the Pandavas. So now nobody knows actually who they are. No names have been said, nothing. Just, they took Draupadi and gone. Right? So, they've dressed like Brahmins, but fight like have defeated all the Kshatriyas. They do know, he's not, Parasaram, Ramachandra, and a couple of others. He knows they're not them. Karna knows, because he knows only these people can defeat me. And Arjuna. But they're saying they're just the Brahmins. So, everybody doesn't know. So then he goes to listen to the conversations. He goes, follows them to the potter's house when they take rest at night, because naturally before you rest, you do something that, kind of is relaxing and comfortable to you, right? So he could hear them talking about, the day, the fighting, and all these kind of Kshatriya stuff. So he went back and informed his father, I think they're Kshatriyas, because of what they're talking about. Like that. So Jai and Vijay, naturally, as doorkeepers, and they're strong, then they talk about how the Lord is so strong. Now he is there, so therefore, because we have the fighting propensity, he has that fighting propensity. But in Vaikuntha, there's no fighting, so therefore, the manifestation of the Lord's qualities is not, complete. So they were thinking, but if we could somehow or another fight, have that fighting with the Lord, then he could manifest that and he can enjoy himself in that way. They were thinking like that. Then the four Kumaras showed up. Then they got cursed. The Lord came just that moment late, so the curse stood. And so then they went, and you see, all the three sets, they all fought with the Lord. It wasn't just they made trouble, sat behind a computer and, cracked, all the world codes and, turned everything upside down. No, they actually physically fought with the Lord, because that was the idea.
They wanted to fight, but to please the Lord.
Yes, please the Lord. So therefore, the point is technically no one falls down, but you could. But it just doesn't happen. Like that. So that's the point, is that bhakti is indestructible, because bhakti actually is, because a Matt Allen offense is not devotion. So then the point is by taking that position, then, see, bhakti means the Lord and his devotees. So if the offense is there, the devotees, then what position do you have with the Lord? You don't really have a position with the Lord, because the Lord means the Lord and the devotees. There's no such thing as me and the Lord. That's the weakness in Mirabai. It's just, there is no such thing. Or say, poetic, the Lord and I. Right? In such a state, one should not revert to performance of karma. Right? So that, what he's saying is, even if he's given up and he's fallen, he shouldn't revert back to karma. Because that's generally what's recommended nowadays. Devotee does something wrong, he should just go back to his karmas. But Vishwanath is saying he shouldn't do that. Prabhupada's not supporting that either. Right? One should not revert to performance of karma. Is there any misfortune somewhere, yatra kva, in his next life? Right? It means you're performing devotional service. It means there's not going to be a problem next life, so why worry about it? So here, we're talking about the karmis who are therefore interested in dharma. And they're worried that either I can't leave my karmas for devotional service, or I've left them for devotional service, now I've fallen from devotional service, I should go back to my karmas, because otherwise next life won't be proper. Because next life is based on this life. Right? So here it's saying, they're worried about dharma. So there's no question that basing it on mundane modern morality, that you're supposed to go back to karmas. Because those karmas are just sinful activities. It's not even prescribed.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, within the rules of the Mlechas, yes, it's prescribed, so therefore you follow it, as long as you're part of their culture. You're not part of your culture. You don't have any duties, because they're not actual duties. Does this make sense? So, what we're talking about, the example he's giving here is a pious Karmi, who's following the Vedas, not a modern person who's working on the platform of Pranamoya, just on morality. Does that make sense? So that doesn't even stand. Right? No, there's no misfortune at all. Okay. So, no, there's no misfortune at all, right? So there isn't any. We may say that there is, but actually there's not. That's the interesting thing, is that we can say all that we want from the mundane platform, according to our backgrounds, our conditioning. But in reality, there isn't any misfortune, because misfortune is being in the material world. We're trying to say that, oh, within the material world there is good and there is bad. No, the whole thing is bad. It's just there's bad and there's worse. Right? You understand? That's what you have. Like that. Okay. Va indicates a remote possibility of falling. Right, so we discussed that. It is stated as a concession to the opponent, Tushyatu Durjana Nyaya. His falling after leaving the present body is actually not a fall. One does not take a low body because of emitting karmas. This is shown by the following statement of the Lord. And so, in other words, if the devotee has any process, even if he ends up as an animal, it's not because of karmas. Right? That's just because of devotional service. Right? Like the animals in the Dham, they're not there because of karmas. Right? They've done something wrong. They're there because they've done something wrong in devotional service. And so somehow or another, they end up as an animal. Right? But you're talking about, you know, this particular life is an animal or something like that. You're not talking about the standard, as Manu says, this huge run of animal lifetimes. You know, and then how many there'll be. Is that what I'm saying?
Offenses. Because of offenses.
Offenses, neglect, attachment, anything. Because if you're counting offense as, you know, being inattentive while chanting, as long as you're counting like that, offense just means offense against my particular... In other words, there is a...
What was the term you used? An interference.
Where my rock fell, you know, your rock is creating interference. That's an offense. But offense means... It's something that disturbs Krishna. We take it as what disturbs, you know, what's a social disturbance. Because we're used to, so these laws of good and bad are social laws for holding things together. They're not religious laws. You know what I'm saying? Like that. They're laws that you do this, it's good for society. You don't do it, it's bad for society. That's all. That's all we're actually dealing with. Very few people will be, you know, quoting from, you know, how you say the Ten Commandments or something like that. Does that make sense?
And being cursed also.
Being cursed.
Yeah.
Are you talking about this in connection with the Ten Commandments?
That's in the first chapter.
That was when they ate the apple.
All right.
Oh, Uddhava. Because I have personally established it, this process of nishkama bhakti is beyond the gunas. Even by starting and not completing the process, there is no destruction of results. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-20. Because we always say this, there's no loss. But we also have to deal with it as if there's no loss. Mm-hmm. Not that we say, yes, devotional service, you've done it, it's eternal and this and that, but if someone does something wrong, then, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to understand what we're dealing with, because the bhakti is not lost. The karmas is not lost. There's no loss in whatever one's doing. The point is, if it's connected to bhakti, there's no loss. If it's not connected to bhakti, there was never anything good about it. Right? This is because certainly the sprout of bhakti, this is still Vishwanath, being productive,
will eventually bear leaves, flowers, and fruit. Instead of the present or future verb, the past tense is used, abhut. This implies a criticism of all those who object by showing the fact that the fact is already proven. And what is gained from performing all of one's karmas, swadharmata, by persons who do not worship the Lord? Right? It's already been established as fact because Krishna says, because I personally established it. This process of nishkam bhakti is beyond the gunas. It's already there. It's not like that. So this nishkam bhakti, this is what Srila Prabhupada is always talking about. He's not talking about something else. Right? It's always about do it for Krishna. There's never any time where he says, you know, do it for yourself, and then, you know, how much you can and when you can, then you give something to Krishna. Right? He never talks like that. Just that do it for Krishna. You know, so how much of your life you can dedicate to Krishna, you do. So even we're talking about only part of the life being dedicated, it's not about sakam, it's always nishkam. Because we're only working, focusing on what part is connected to Krishna, that's the part we're talking about, that's bhakti. The other parts, that's just an artist. That makes sense? You understand the perspective? So you just don't hear this. When you hear in your general Vedic society, they're always talking about the karmas. Like that. But here, no, Prabhupada and the acharyas are only talking about bhakti. They're not talking something else. Okay, so this was a footnote. Okay, so now we're at the top of 95. Another objection may be raised. According to scripture, by performing prescribed duties, one gains happiness in this life and in the next. How can one promote bhakti by rejecting one's prescribed duties and consequently the happiness in this and next life? The answer is given in verse 18. A non-devotee who misses the opportunity to hear about Krishna gains nothing, even if he is fully engaged in his occupational duties. Sensory happiness, like sensory misery, comes to one automatically in due course of time. Therefore, one should not struggle hard for it. Right? So, in other words, one is thinking, I'm doing this duty, and because of that duty, I'm getting this result. No, because you've done this duty previously, you're getting the result now. What you're doing now is what you'll get in the future. Right? So, if you're worried that I won't get good facilities now, unless I do my karmas, that's not the philosophy. You're getting your good karmas now because of previous work. The point is by devotion, then the future is devotional service. As we say, the samskaras, the identity changes. And so the results from this bhakti now will be, when you get benefit now, you get benefit later. And whatever you do from your previous karma, that will come anyway. That has nothing to do with what you're doing now. There's always the idea, no, but I did it now, and then I... Does that make sense? I mean, you can do bad stuff now and reduce good karma. That's fair. You know, but the other things you can't. So there's things, why would one give that up, happiness in this life and the next? Because it has nothing to do, because next life is going to be the same as this life. Right? It's not that we think, oh, but it'll be better in the future, because we think of all the good things happening. Now we're thinking of the bad things happening. The point is now bad and good happens, in the future bad and good will happen. Right? It doesn't change. A non-devotee who misses the opportunity to hear about Krishna gains nothing, even if he's fully engaged in his occupational duties, because it's not him. The souls gain nothing. So then there's the element that says, no, but we have all this facility and support and wealth and power, but the soul has none of that. Body has all that. Right? Because the point is, if the soul has it, then why is it when the body dies, then everybody says you don't have it anymore? No. When the person dies, then it's all gone. They don't have any authority over it. The guy's dead. Does he have authority over the company? No. Who signs the papers? The dead guy? Right? You know, you can just see. You know, the lawyer's office and all that, they call in the secretary and says, here, can you take these papers to be signed down to the, you know, the dead guy at the morgue and all that, you know? He's got to sign over, you know, all the...
happens.
No.
No.
Yeah. So it's, sensory happiness, like sensory misery, comes to one automatically in due course of time. Therefore, one should not struggle hard for it. You just do your duties, and whatever comes or not, then that's just the way it is. That's verse 18. Srila Prabhupada explains, miseries and mixed happiness are two features of material life. Interesting how he presents it. He doesn't say mixed miseries and mixed happiness. He says miseries and mixed happiness are two features of material life. Right? Then they are obtained in Brahmaloka and in other lokas also. They are obtained in the life of the demigods and also in the life of the dogs and hogs. The miseries and mixed happiness of all living beings are only of different degree and quality, but no one is freed from the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Similarly, everyone has his destined happiness also. No one can get more or less of these things simply by personal endeavors. Even if they are abandoned, they can be lost again. Oh, no, even if they are obtained, they can be lost again. One should not, therefore, waste time with these flimsy things. One should only endeavor to go back to Godhead. That should be the mission of everyone's life. Right? So, no flimsy things. That kind of cuts out a lot of modern, you know, how you say, modern business kind of cultures. Most of it's pretty flimsy. And then they're talking about even if it's quality things, it's still flimsy because it's temporary. So that should be the mission of everyone's life. That's what it should be for. You know, you do what you need to do. In other words, you make your endeavor according to your duties, so whatever comes easily from that, that you be satisfied with. Because more is not going to come. You can work more, it's not that more will come. Does that make sense? You can get it, seemingly you might get something more on this side, but you're losing on another side. So it always balances. It's not that you get more. You never get more. It's not possible. Are you saying? In this case, what is it? Prison always wins. Right? You know, it always works out. If one should not struggle in vain for material happiness, then what should one do? Narad Muni explains, on the other hand, persons who are actually intelligent should endeavor for that goal of life that is unattainable to those who wander from Brahmaloka down to the lowest planet, Patala. One who attains this goal is known as Rasagraha. He can do nothing but remember the taste of the ecstasy of the Lord's lotus feet again and again. Even if somehow or other he falls down, he does not undergo a material existence like the fruit of workers. This is proven by the examples of Bharat, Chitraketu, and Ajamiyo. Text 19. Verse 19 again emphasizes that there is no misfortune for the devotee. The same point is repeatedly affirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. 6:40. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. 9:31. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. A little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous kind of fear. 2:40. In his purport to 1:5:19, Srila Prabhupada gives an analogy to describe the unique position of the fallen devotee. There are certainly many instances where devotees of the Lord have fallen down due to uncongenial association. But even though he falls down, a devotee is never to be considered the same as a fallen karmi. A karmi suffers as a result of his own fruitive reactions, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directly by the Lord himself. The sufferings of an orphan and the sufferings of a beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to take care of him. But a beloved son of a rich man, although he appears to be on the same level as the orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father. Yes?
What type of devotee do we talk specifically here?
It can be any. Like, you know, it can be from the neophyte on up, Bharat Maharaj. Still, everything worked out.
Those examples are quite elevated, so.
But I mean, it's just, you know, local means, how you say. Look around, Or look on Facebook. So many examples. Does that make sense? The point is it's still, there's no loss. It doesn't mean that they may not be taking advantage of what they have. You know, just like you have money in the bank. You know, you don't draw it out or deal with it. There's no loss. It just sits there. So the bhakti just sits there. You know, you may be off doing all kinds of other insane things, but it still sits there.
But the position of the fallen devotee is better than the karmi because he also has this bhakti, or because the Lord also appears personally.
Now, before we're using the term interference,
that is specific. I have not been that clear.
but what do you mean by interfere?
That's what was.
So it means the child is about to stick his finger in the fire, and the parent interferes. Okay, so you're using it in that kind of context. Generally, we'd use another. We'd use intervene.
Or
something else, right? You know, like that. Because interfere generally means gets in the way of progress or something. Intervene, yeah. So you have both. The devotion doesn't go. The Lord intervenes. You know, the devotees intervene. Yeah, but that takes a different thing, an intervention. Right? Yeah, that's all these things. So, yeah, devotees seem to have always been doing these things.
Or as following the intervention of the Lord, as is mentioned here, he punished, personally punished the devotee. Now,
well, it's not a matter of punishment, it's a matter of correction. See, the means there's a mentality that's wrong. Because of the wrong mentality, one does something wrong. So the idea is correction is there for bringing one back to the proper understanding and path. Right? Even the politically correct, they call them correctional institutions. Right? You know, so the material world is a correctional institution. Now, it may be applied through punishment, and how others in the community look at it is retribution. You know, that they've done wrong, they must be punished, because otherwise we don't appreciate these kind of things. But the actual point is, it's just the Lord's trying to bring the devotee, you know, to devotional service. Does that sound like that?
When is the devotee considered to... once the Lord is going to act, and the question is, when is that person to be considered the devotee that the Lord?
When is from when they start, when they come in contact with the devotees? Otherwise, how do they come in contact with the devotees? You know what I'm saying? Harinams, it means how many, means you have a big city, right? How many streets are there? How many blocks are there? You know, so, and how many of those streets and blocks is the Harinam going down? You know what I'm saying? And then you bump into them. So the Lord's involved. He's always involved. He's involved with the Karmi's life. Right? You know, the Karmi wants to be famous and successful, so he has the karma, Krishna arranges it. You know? But the experience of fame, the experience of success, that's still Krishna. You know, you're doing something and you like doing it. Right? Because what you're tasting is Krishna. As soon as you stop doing it, that taste goes. So then you want to do more. But you don't discern. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. So it works socially. But actually, you know, without education, you don't actually learn from it. Because otherwise the kids playing, they don't want to stop playing, right? Because they do something, and they're getting something. And if they stop, then they're missing that experience of Krishna in the form of whatever it was, like the excitement that they got in playing. You understand? So they don't appreciate when the parents come and tell them to stop playing. Because for their parents, then that's just part of a bigger scene. You know, playing is part of an overall bigger part of their life. So just now it's time, not time for this, it's time for that. But they still don't, so the kid thinks it's the playing that is Krishna.
And the parents think it's my social, you know, my social interaction that's Krishna. Neither are understanding that it's actually Krishna that makes these external elements appear to be attractive. So therefore, there's no real difference between an adult and a kid as far as playing with material energy. Just the adult has a more sophisticated, you know, idea, and the kid has a little bit less sophisticated. In his purport to 1.5.19, Srila Prabhupada gives an analogy to describe the unique position of the fallen devotee. Oh, we just read that. Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This verse elaborates the point that there is no misfortune for the devotee, even if overcome because of poor determination. The person who serves Mukunda never returns to samsara, the place for enjoying the results of karma, whereas those practicing karma return. That is because he does not experience happiness and distress from karmas, since he experiences only the fruit of happiness and distress directly given by the Lord. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful activities. Since it is you alone who controls his good and bad fortune. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-40. Another quote. The Vaishnavas do not have rebirth caused by karma, Padma Purana. So in other words, their rebirth, what birth they take, that has nothing to do with karma. So they never see Yamaraj. Devotees just don't see Yamaraj like that. But anybody who's not a devotee, whether pious or sinful, they all see Yamaraj. You know, it's just like, let's say, the very pious men of the community and all that, you know, are wealthy, powerful, they all see the Prime Minister. But also so may the prisoners. You might come and visit the, you know, like that. So, you know, everybody sees. It's not that it's like that. But the arrangements are slightly different. Right? Remembering from previous practice alone the mental embrace, upaguhanam, of the Lord's lotus feet, he has no desire to give that up. The verse does not say remembering his lotus feet, but rather remembering the embrace of his lotus feet. And the word again is used. The implication of these two words is that even though he may give up his own choice, the worship once, twice, or three times because of poor determination. After some time, by remembering his previous state of bliss from remembering the Lord and also remembering his present state of distress from not remembering the Lord, he repents. Oh, what have I foolishly done? Let that be. I will not again abandon worship of the Lord. He again begins worshiping the Lord. Because it's just a matter of time. Like, we're looking on it that, you know, if something hasn't happened immediately, then, you know, there's a problem. But, you know, we're looking at longer time. So at some point, he'll figure it out. The verse also uses the phrase, does not desire to give up, instead of does not give up. This implies that he desires that he be devoid of pride in his practice. The accomplishment is in the hands of the Lord. The cause of not desiring to give up is then mentioned. Right? So it means he doesn't want to give up. I mean, he doesn't have the desire to give up. Doesn't mean that something doesn't happen. So then it's up to the Lord who then gives that determination, gives that focus. But you have to want it. Right? So if he continues like that, then it will come. So, the cause of not desiring to give it up is then mentioned. Rasagraha means one who is eager for tasting, or one who has a taste which is something like a ghost, which cannot be given up. Haunted by rasa. The meaning is then that worship after the stages of nishta, ruchi, and asakti becomes actual rasa at the stage of rati.
However, even from the first day of worshiping the Lord, there is certainly a portion of tasting rasta in a very covered form. So that answers your question. Says you know, even here, what says? Even from the first day of worshiping the Lord. Right? So this counts for devotees. Okay, thus it is said, devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things, these three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of Krishna, in the same way that pleasure, fullness of the stomach, and relief from hunger are exhibited simultaneously with each bite for a person engaged in eating. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42. Our eating man is not here. Okay, that was no. Do we have more up here? That was. Oh no, this is the. This is the name. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on the same verse as follows. This verse affirms that a person who has once tasted the nectar, rasa graha, of serving Lord Krishna can never abandon the nectar of that service. To him, everything else is like iron or rocks or other hard and dry things. Footnote. 48. The same applies for those fortunate souls who have developed taste for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow can never be attracted by any other literature. Srimad Bhagavatam 12, 13, 15.
What does that mean? Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme, and detachment from other things. Devotion, in the just on the previous phase.
Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things.
Okay, what is that? What is that word, devotion? Like, what is that?
But I mean, so detachment is clear.
Yeah.
Okay. Direct experience of the Supreme Lord.
The words make sense.
Okay. So devotion means that feeling towards, right? And then performing the service, then that experience of interacting with the Lord. Does that make sense? It means everybody's doing an activity. It doesn't matter who it is. Devotee, non-devotee, everybody. So the point is you're doing an activity. Why are you doing the activity?
Getting the result.
They're getting the result. But now that result means there's a desire for getting a result, and there's the experience of the result, right? The two different things, right? So that devotion is the feeling towards, and the experience of is what is having gained the result. What is the experience, right? So in other words, there's the desire to be involved, and there's the result that you get from it. Or that feeling that you have, and then the result from that interaction.
Okay. Does that make sense?
You know, that's why it says pleasure, you know, like that, fullness of the stomach and relief from hunger. So they all happen at the same time. Okay.
What would be the main reasons for devotees falling down? We discussed
it. Yeah, it means here, every time they generally bring it up, it hasn't this last one. The first one is always bad association. Always mention bad association. So whether that bad association is in the mind, whether it's actually directly physical, you know, whatever the reason is, it's bad association. So just like, what's the cause of bhakti? Good association. So what's the cause of going away from bhakti? It's bad. So that's why bad association is always given up. What's that? Asat sanga tyag vaishnava char. Okay, continuing with the Jiva Goswami's comments on this verse. The Supreme Lord will not abandon his devotee either. These truths are confirmed by the demigod Brahma in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.5. O my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet, carried by the air of Vedic sound through the holes of the ears, accept your devotional service. For them, you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. Yeah, that's very poetic. This truth is also described by Abhihotra, in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.255. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead never leaves the heart of his devotee. We can conclude the discussion on verses 17 through 19 by saying that on one hand, any gain outside of devotional service is doomed, but on the other hand, devotional gains are eternal. Advancing through devotional service is so perfect that even if a devotee falls, the Lord personally takes charge of rectifying him. Having explained the glories of devotional service, Srila Narad Muni now imparts the knowledge of the worship of the Lord, which is necessary for the proper performance of devotional service. My dear Vyasadeva, you know very well that the Lord is the cosmos and yet is aloof from it. The cosmic manifestation emanated from him, rests in him, and enters into him after annihilation. You know this well enough in detail. I am giving only a synopsis. Okay, so having explained devotional service, then the knowledge of the Lord. So then you can also see, like in Gita, the process of devotional service, engaging oneself in Lord's service is given. Then you get the knowledge about the Lord. So the same kind of pattern is there. Because otherwise, if someone's not interested in devotional service, then why will they be interested in, you know, in the Lord? But if they're interested in devotional service, they're interested in the Lord. And you can only know the Lord through devotional service, so only if you have that kind of attitude can you actually understand. So there's no advantage to describing the Lord first. Right? In detail. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada summarizes the knowledge as follows. What's the difference between a summary and a synopsis? Are they just synonyms of the same thing?
To some degree, they're synonyms. There may be some subtle differences like that.
No. Okay. For a pure devotee, the conception of Mukunda, Lord Sri Krishna, is both personal and impersonal. The impersonal cosmic situation is also Mukunda because it is the emanation of the energy of Mukunda. Because one might think, why, for a pure devotee, why is the conception of Mukunda is both personal and impersonal, right? It'd only be personal. They're only rolling around on the ground in ecstasy. Problem is you're here in this world and you're looking at it and dealing with it. So how do you see that connection with Krishna? So many times you see the devotees then separate into devotional service and the material world. But what they're saying here is for the pure devotee, then it's all one, it's all the Lord. But the cosmic manifestation, that's the impersonal manifestation, right? Does that make sense? We take it that impersonal means Brahma Jyoti, which is something beyond that we can't see. But actually, this is all Brahma, Brahman, right? It's Brahma Jyoti has entered into external, Brahma Jyoti Brahman has entered into external energy Brahman. And that's why we think it's functioning. And then in that has entered the Jiva, and into that has entered the Supreme Lord. Right? So that's then what's going on. So everything's Brahman. But we're dealing with four kinds of Brahman here. Is that So they see everything in connection with the Lord. If one can't accommodate the impersonal, you can't accommodate all these external features in connection with the Lord. Right, some you can, you know, because you see the connection. I'm driving my car to the temple, so that's all the more you think. But if you think about, you know, how carburetors and pistons and, you know, how you say all these other things like that, then the difficulty comes up is that how are you connecting that? So that's why you have to be able to understand the impersonal. According to the Vedic version, the Lord is naturally very powerful, and thus his supreme energies are always perfect and identical with him. The external energy is comparatively inferior, whereas the internal potency is superior. The superior energy is living force, and therefore she is completely identical. But the external energy, being inert, is partially identical. Footnote 49. This is, in a nutshell, the Achinta Bheda doctrine. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this in Paramatma Sandarbha Anucheta 16. Statements that say that the material world is non-different from the Lord have as their purpose to fix the sadhakas who see only the gross material platform as the Lord? As.
I think it's saying fix the sadhakas at the Lord.
The purpose to fix the sadhakas who see only the gross material at the... Oh, I see. Okay, so they're using it like you would dashes or something. Okay. But the cause is more than the effect. And thus, the material world is not equal to the Lord, but is an effect of the Lord. But because the Lord is real, the material world also must be real. Defeating Mayavadi philosophy, which says that the material world is false, from Sat, that which exists, only existence comes. From that which is false, only false things come. That which is in the cause must manifest itself in the effect. Chandogya Upanishad 6.1.4. This one continues? Or? Chandogya Upanishad. Oh, I see. I thought it was the end here. I thought, so that which is false, only that which is the cause must manifest itself as the effect. Chandogya Upanishad. I see. Then everybody turns the page. Why are they turning the page? So Chandogya Upanishad states that since pots are transformations of mud, understanding mud helps us understand pots. Shruti, yeah, but understanding pots doesn't really make you understand mud. Right? Because the qualities of mud are limited in pots. Right? Unless you have a pot full of mud. But then the point is it's the mud. That's the... Does that make sense? Because the manifestation of qualities of the mud is there in the pots. But it's only limited what's in the pot. The mud has so many other aspects. Right? So the Lord is greater as the cause. So there must be some aspect or quality of the Lord in the effect. Otherwise, what's the connection? You can't get something coming from something and it not be the same. It's just smaller. Right? If I have a carrot and I take a piece of carrot, what do I have? Carrot. Right. Easy. So, point is, if you have Brahman, anything coming from Brahman will still be Brahman. So, if you have Sat, eternality, what comes from it is Sat, eternality. No such thing as illusion. Right? The illusion is not understanding that it's Sat. That's the illusion. Shruti also makes it clear that effect is non-different from the cause. But cause is more than effect, right? So they're non-different, but the origin is always more. So Krishna and his energies are non-different, but Krishna is always more. The material world is non-different from the Lord, but the Lord is different from the material world. Right? Because if you're more, that means you're different. This is the Achinta Bheda. The Lord is different from the material world. At the same time, the material world is not different from the Lord. Cause contains all of the effect, but effect doesn't contain the entirety of the cause. Vedic philosophy is to understand the Lord and thus understand the material world. Thus understand the material world different from the scientists who study the material world and understand nothing about its ultimate cause. Therefore, the Lord has the energy and is thus not different from the material world, but the material world is not Him. Yes.
The first statement in this paragraph, the Lord, it's interesting the order. The Lord is different from the material world, at the same time, the material world is not different from the Lord. The way it's put that way, the Lord is different. The material world is not different.
Because it's part of. Right? In other words, you have something, so that something is part of you, but it's not that it is you. Mm-hmm. You know? You're not part of it. It's part of you. So it's very nice to explain. Because this solves all the problem of your difficulties in world religions where they can't see the Lord's connection to the material world. Because if he's involved and it's not going so well, then that means he's to blame. Right? And so then
point is he's involved, but he's not involved. You know, it's not different from him, but he's different from it. You know, therefore you can have the devotion to the Lord. Otherwise, if they're exactly the same, what's the difference in having devotion to material energy and not to the Lord, but the same? So it would work. You know, like the, you know, it's like the viceroy, it means that the king is different from the viceroy. But the viceroy is non-different from the king. So when you deal with the viceroy, you're thinking where you're dealing with the king. You're never dealing with the viceroy. So the devotee is never dealing with the material energy. He's dealing with the material energy as part of the Lord. But he's dealing with it in the higher purpose of serving the Lord, because the Lord is different. So the devotion is to the Lord, and the material energy only represents the Lord. It makes it very simple. If we continuously discuss these kind of topics, you know, the next few years, and hopefully one day we'll actually get it. It'll soak in.
Right. As the example, like a person and his shoes. The shoes is like the representative, but not the actual person.
Yeah. You mean you're talking about where you identify the shoes with the person, like in yes or something?
Like if you see the I don't know, no. I don't know.
Huh?
Like if one sees person's shoes and one thinks...
Yeah, yes. If as long as you connect the two together. Most people, them and their shoes, you don't connect. But it does happen there for an example. But yes. Yeah. Oh, so you could say, it means generally the example is given like the mother seeing the shoes.
Right.
Because generally the mother knows all the shoes. So. Like that, but you know, everybody else. So, yes, that would be the, what do you call it, vibhava, that it reminds you of. So that's the advantage. So the non-difference reminds you of the person who is different. Right? Because otherwise, how can it remind you of the person if it's different? So it has to be non-different to remind you, but why would it remind you if there's not a difference? Because if they're the same, there's no need to think of difference.
Yes.
Does that work out? No, but remember is that the Vibhava then had that aspect of Udipan. Yeah, which is seeing something in connection with the Lord reminds you of the Lord. But that's the point, it's connected to the Lord. It reminds you of the Lord. Because it's connected to the Lord, so it's non-different. But because the Lord is different, therefore you remember the Lord. That's why it's always, even you're worshiping the devotees or anything like that, then it's always because it reminds you of the Lord who is different.
Okay.
That's its specialness. You know, so people who are sitting on a more mundane platform, then they'll think, no, but why are they, why are we worshiping the Vaishnavas? You know, because, you know, they're humble, they don't want to be worshipped, so we're saving them from false pride by not worshipping them. Aren't I such a great guy? You know, we don't worship him, don't give him any money, don't give him any service, because they might become proud and fall down. We wouldn't want it because of that, would we? You know, so, sounds great, huh? But the reality is then that means you're thinking they're different from the Lord. You know, you can't see this as this simultaneous difference and non-difference. Like that. So that's why then Vyasadeva gave these lower levels of consciousness so that people could find some identity and then work within the common system. The only difficulty is within those who are fruitive workers, it's basically a common system. So, you know, they have differences of opinion. But when you get into the devotional, even though they follow the same system, then there's a problem in the devotees can accommodate the non-devotees, and non-devotees, that's the problem called accommodating the devotees. Because right? That means then you're giving up the lower for a higher, and that's not desired. Right? Someone who's given up a lower for a higher doesn't care if someone has a lower taste. You know? Yeah.
In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is original cause of the material universe, and one of his potencies is the ingredient of which the material universe is constructed. In this way, the nature of the Lord and his potency is understood. It's interesting. And one of his potencies is the ingredient. Because actually, there's just Padam. That's the ingredient. And then the ingredient has 24 sub-aspects. It's only one ingredient.
To make a material creation, you just take the ingredient and one spark of splendor, and then it's done.
Yeah. You just have to be able to get that all together. This comes from the page before, right?
Yes.
Ah, okay. But, from the page before, both the energies are neither equal to or greater than the Lord. Who is the generator of all energies? Such energies are always under his control. So he's established the superior energy and the inferior. Right? And so, but both are neither equal to nor greater than the Lord. Such energies are always under his control. The human being and all other living entities are products of his internal energies. Thus, the living being is also identical with the Lord, but he is never equal or superior to the personality of Godhead. The human being, after attaining complete perfection, may achieve a large percentage of the qualities of the Lord, say up to 78%. But it is never possible to surpass the Lord or to become equal with them. It's very interesting. Say up to 78%, just like kind of like, you know, could be any number, you know, like that. At the same time as this say up to means this, it can be anywhere from 0 up to 78%. But it is never possible to surpass the Lord or become equal with him. The misguided living beings therefore must accept the supremacy of the Lord and agree to render loving service to him. For this they have been created. Without this, there cannot be any peace or tranquility in this world. Okay. Srila Vyasadeva is advised by Srila Narada to expand this idea in the Bhagavatam. So here it's also interesting. For this they have been created. But Krishna also explains that the soul is never created. That means they're always there. So then that would mean is manifestation, just like the material energy is always there. But we talk about it as temporary because it's manifestation. That's the difference. Its manifestation is temporary, while all other aspects of his energy, their manifestation is eternal, though they themselves are eternal. Does that make sense? So the soul is not created. He always was. But his manifestation, then you can say that as the creation. In other words, he manifests for that purpose of giving pleasure to the Lord.
Before the manifestation, the soul just within Krishna?
Yeah, I mean, just as part of his energies, right? Because all of his energies are there, because he's the Lord of his energies. So he just, we're a specific aspect of the marginal potency. Like that, but all of his energies are limited, so therefore. Srila Vyasadeva can accomplish this task because he is an avatar of the Lord and, as such, spontaneously possesses perfect knowledge. Quote, "Indeed, you are the plenary portion of the Lord Himself, the very reason for your appearance in this world, even though you are birthless, is to more vividly describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord." Footnote 50. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to 1.5.21, "Although formally Srila Nard Rishi is a spiritual master, Srila Vyasadeva is not at all dependent on a spiritual master because in essence he is the spiritual master of everyone else. But because he is doing the work of an acharya, he has taught us by his own conduct that one must have a spiritual master, even though he be God himself. Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Rama, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all incarnations of Godhead, accepted formal spiritual masters, although by their transcendental nature, they were cognizant of all knowledge. In order to direct people in general to the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, he himself, in the incarnation of Vyasadeva, is delineating the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. No, that's not. We're on the same page, right? Okay. Tapasya, Vedic study, performance of sacrifice. Oh, sorry. How did that happen?
Just looked at the clock, it was 1:45.
No, I guess we should finish the. We'll read it, I'll discuss it. Tapasya, Vedic study, performance of sacrifice, chanting hymns, and giving charity culminate in the glorification of Lord Uttama Shloka. This is the conclusion of those who truly know the Vedic purpose. Verses 21 through 22.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai,
Jai Bhakti Vrinda ki
Jai,
Jai Jai Dauda ki
Jai.